Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Jose Miranda. Jose Miranda's animal spirit is the water buffalo. He spent his life with them and always dreamed of taking over his parents' buffalo ranch on the plains of Venezuela. When he was a child in the 1970s, Venezuela was the richest country in South America, with vast oil fields. But by the time he reached his teens, the price of oil began to drop, and his once rich, oil-dependent country began to experience food shortages and unrest. In 1998, Jose came to the United States to study animal and ranch management at Montana State University. He was 22, and Hugo Chavez had just been elected president. When he graduated in 2001, Jose returned to Venezuela with his new wife and their dream of starting a family on the ranch. Meanwhile, Chavez's land reform program had just begun, and they were nationalizing ranches and subdividing the land. In 2005, conditions in Venezuela forced Jose's parents to sell the ranch. Jose and his wife and his son and his new daughter were in the United States at the time. Jose was studying solar technology at Colorado Mountain College, while his wife and children spent time with her parents. By 2008, Jose and his family prepared to return to Venezuela. I started our interview by asking him why they had planned to return.
So when I went back to Venezuela was when Chavez was on his last leg, and I thought there was a chance for things to turn around in Venezuela. So I went back, you know, with the intention of really helping change things around. It did not happen because, you know, the powers that were at the moment taking control of the government, Venezuela is run by mafias. And at the moment, you know, the Cuban mafia makes sure that whoever took control of the government was one of their puppets that they could manipulate. And that's how Maduro got up there. So that was the time that I thought things could change. And, you know, at the moment, all the cheating that it was possible to do for the election, they did. It was not a fair election. And Maduro was the one that ended up in power then. It was a moment that also people were just devastated by the death of Chavez. And, he asked before he died, you know, vote for this guy. And they manipulated the whole psyches of the country to have this guy in control. After that, he's been harvesting everything that Chavez planted. It's what Maduro's been doing, harvesting that. He's totally unprepared for the position, totally unprepared to run the country. What these guys are prepared for is to spread their rotten ideology all over South America, and that's what they've been doing. They're too busy running the mafias of the drugs from Colombia, the gold from the Amazon, and the mafias that run the oil industry nowadays. It used to be nationalized since the 70s. It was nationalized or way before then. And it's what moved the economy. But these guys just ran the industry to the ground, and then whatever is left, they run it like it's their personal bank account. So, yeah, when I went back, I thought things were going to change around, and it didn't. You know, things got worse is what happened. And we were living at the ranch, living off the land, trying to stay away from all the political situation and the violence that is happening mostly in the cities. But eventually, it caught up with us at the ranch. We were robbed at gunpoint at the farm, and I was
really
tied down in front of the family, and they basically cleaned out and took everything they could. You know, fortunately, it was just material things, and soon as they were gone, I realized that it was time to get out of there. So I loaded my family in the plane the next 3 days after that. And I stayed behind for about a month, just, you know, closing up all the business that I had. And that was it. I knew I wasn't going back because it really everything just got out of hand. You know, the crime and the inflation, the shortages of food and medicine, and these guys have no planning sites to solve it, right? There's been no investment in maintenance of any infrastructure, no investment in new infrastructure, so everything is just run down. As long as people are too busy staying in line to find food and they cover their basic needs, they're going to be just too busy to go out and protest and try to, you know, fight for anything bigger for the country. Just too busy fighting to survive, you know?
it's rich agricultural land, so it's amazing that people are starving.
Well, that's been an issue that's been ongoing since the oil industry started, you know, since we realized that we could get everything with oil. The countryside was basically abandoned. So we used to have really good coffee, cacao production, and cattle, and all that got abandoned slowly because there's been no real investment, you know, and the bright minds of the time used to say we need to plant the oil, in the sense we need to invest all this income that we're getting from oil in agriculture. So when we don't have the oil anymore, we have something to rely upon. We didn't do the homework.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm your host, Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Jose Miranda. Jose is talking about his country of Venezuela and the conditions that forced him to leave. How was that? That must have been really hard to have to leave the country, the people that, you know, your family is still there, some of your family?
Yeah, some of my family is there. Some of my family have left. I got family spread out all over the world, just like everybody else in Venezuela. Whoever was able to leave and find a job somewhere else did. And some that stay because, you know, they still feel a sense of responsibility with the business they have to keep people employed, or because they're too old to leave, or because, you know, they are too afraid to leave. They're already retired and they have a few belongings that they depend on for retirement. They're too afraid to start all over in a, you know, without any, you know, with nothing. So right now you had a country that had a huge young population that had left. So now you have all these senior citizens finding themselves without kids and grandkids because they're all gone. And in a lot of cases, these older seniors are immigrants themselves. That they came to Venezuela escaping Franco or Pinochet or you name it.
So the 3 million people, which is, what, a tenth of the population
that have migrated
left.
Right now, yeah.
And a lot of those are young or people who had enough money to be able to get out of the country have gone. And like you said.
Yeah, so mostly young people, I would say. It's because there's no future. You know, when you find yourself that there's no future, that's a big one, right? There's just no hope. The crime is out of control. There's no punishment for any crime. The shortages of all the basic supplies is very serious.
So you had to leave your land, you had to leave your livestock, everything.
At that point, nothing really mattered. At that point, it was like safety first, obviously. And I couldn't keep, you know, my foreign wife in Venezuela anymore either. Under those circumstances.
Did you feel like you were going to die that day or was...
Oh, yeah. You know, everything was put on the line. It was like, you think about everything and you just pray that, you know, none of the material stuff that they took matter at the moment. All you care is that, you know, the family was fine and...
Yeah.
Then you reevaluate everything, you know. It's just not worth it anymore to put them on such a harmful environment or such a dangerous environment, you know.
So you came back.
I came back and started from nothing again. Came back and at least we had the support of the people that we knew in Carbondale. The kids had some friends that they had met, you know, 5 years before. And so it wasn't totally foreign from them coming back to Colorado again.
But under those circumstances, was it hard on your family to recover from that?
What was the hardest is that we went from living at the ranch and having the kids, you know, hang out with me all day back and forth to having a full-time job, and that was it. You know, the kids were homeschooled and now they went back to public school. So it was shocking to them, you know, the whole shift in schedule and everything just got disrupted as how the dynamic of the family was.
Did you get depressed about it?
Oh, for years, yeah. I spent at least 4 years holding on to the thought of what we had lost and, you know, depressed of the situation in Venezuela in general, you know, because it seems to have had no end in sight, right? The government is being kidnapped by international mafias is what we have going on. And it's in a situation that is out of the hands of Venezuela. We had tried through all the democratic means to get rid of this dictator regime that we had. It's just been basically impossible. It's taking all these years, ringing the bells to raise international awareness of what's happening in Venezuela as far as human rights violations. I mean, the situation is so daring that some people consider, and rightfully so, that it's genocide, because it's basically they're persecuting and running away anyone that doesn't think like they do. So it's a political genocide in a way. So right now there's hundreds of detained from the protests. So you got hundreds of people that are in jail just because they disagree with the government, and they have raised their voice to disagree in legitimate protest that is one of the rights under our constitution. So they always play the card that they're being very democratic, that they like to talk, they like the dialogue, they always show the constitution, you know, but they always manipulate it and they always cheat. There's no independence of power because they have bought the Supreme Court and the whole, what is called the election committee, basically. What they have not been able to control is the National Assembly, and they were not expecting what's happening right now.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. My interview today is with Jose Miranda. Jose is talking about conditions in his home country of Venezuela and the rise to power of Juan Guaido. So what do you think the chances are of this young upstart Guaido?
Juan Guaido. What happens now is they did not expect that this kid, that is a total new generation of politician.
He's in a very dangerous place.
He is, but he's not the only one. I mean, there's several young kids of the same stature, integrity, and just desire to change Venezuela. He just, somebody said that what happened to this kid is kind of like winning a tiger on the lottery.
Ooh.
Right? It's not something he wanted.
Tiger, no cage.
Right. So like very, very difficult position to be in. And he had to be, you know, very tough. I'm sure he's gone threats and intimidated or bribes and all kinds of things. But this kid is definitely determined to make things right. And he is backed by the constitution. He's being backed by international community that is sick and tired of these clan of thieves taking advantage of the region, basically. And in the name of, not even the socialists are with them anymore. You know, they have ruined the name of socialism. So what worries me right now is that the general public in the United States are really clueless as to what's going on. Of course, at the first reaction, the natural reaction, and it would be my natural reaction if I had no idea what's happening in Venezuela, is, hey, what are these guys going to go do over there? Take advantage of the oil? Because it's obvious that there's a huge amount of natural resources in Venezuela, which is exactly why Russia, China, Iran, Turkey are highly interested in leaving this guy there.
Right.
And then I said, but these guys are saying, you know, leave Maduro there. Yeah, because they already have an agreement to extract a ton of oil and gold, right? And they already have invested a lot in order to have those contracts, right? So yeah, now it's, unfortunately, we have been put in a very terrible situation to deal with the devil in a way. So it's something that Juan Guaido is going to have to do, probably deal with all these deals that have been promised to several different countries so that we can move on and forward. Because at the end of the day, the situation is so chaotic in Venezuela that is not in the benefit of anybody, because Russia and China will not be able to extract oil or gold under these conditions, because it's impossible to operate any business like this. So it's to their own personal selfish benefit and economic interest to get rid of this guy too.
So the United States and China and Russia are in a major standoff here. And Russia have major interests. The United States gets a fair amount of oil from Venezuela. So we definitely have an interest in trying to maintain some kind of sanity there.
Yes, I agree. We don't want the U.S. to go in there just to take advantage of the natural resources or to put another dictator there. No, nobody wants that. Venezuela doesn't want that, but Venezuela wants and needs help of their neighbor to get rid of this international problem.
Yeah, true help, you know, not just coming in to take the resources that are there. So, yeah.
And we're not asking for much. We're just asking for a government of transition and real free elections.
It must be hard for you to watch this.
Well, it's more encouraging now. Now I feel very encouraged of what's happened. You know, it's like you got to have the ups and downs, and this is like a terrible cleansing that we had to go through, you know, and a lot of lessons to be learned as a nation from this. But at least these guys are clear of a path to move forward and start solving some of the problems, where the dictators that we have right now are clueless as to how to solve the issue because they're not interested. It's going exactly like they planned it.
So would you go back if things started to look better?
You know, that desire of going back and helping Venezuela kind of came back again after seeing what's happening right now. It kind of had been dead on me for a very long time, but yeah. I feel very optimistic about the changes that are starting to take place right now. Definitely.
But you've got a whole life that you're building here. You've introduced water buffalo. Can you talk about that? Your project, sure. Your passion?
So after I came back in 2014, I came back in 2013, 2014. I came back to work at a cattle ranch. And although I was working with cattle, still was not the same. Still was thinking about, you know, Venezuela and all the losses of the last few years. And then Colorado legislation changed to classify the water buffalo as a domestic species. In the past, it was classified as an exotic species, just as the same as the African water buffalo. But the Asian water buffalo is a totally different species. You cannot even breed them, crossbreed the African with the Asian water buffalo.
How are they different? How is the Asian buffalo different than the African?
Well, the African water buffalo cannot really be domesticated. That's a different
it's
beast.
Fierce.
And the horns, yeah, the horns are very different. The Asian water buffalo is the same you see in India and China. That is the one that you have kind of the image of the buffalo using to plow the rice fields, right?
Or, right, right.
So it gets used for work, for milk production, and for meat. All over the world is one of the number one relied upon domestic species. It's just that the U.S. were kind of far behind on that one. And it's because the imports of water buffaloes is close. There were a few imports in the 70s, I think it was, and that was about it. So a few producers have some large herds. It's only in the last few years that more people are starting to focus on breeding and training them for milk production, which is really where they have the great advantage. They have, I call it the queen of milk. It's pure white, it's thicker, more dense milk, and it's higher in calcium and vitamin A. And it's better for making cheese. So you get more pounds of cheese per gallon of milk from a water buffalo than you do from regular cow. And people that are lactose intolerant have no issue related with it. So,
buffalo mozzarella.
The original mozzarella is made out of water buffalo.
Oh, really? Milk.
So Italy is really big into breeding water buffaloes. Nowadays, you find them in the UK, in Canada.
You seem to have a special relationship with them.
You know, that's it's a special bond. It's kind of hard to break. You know, once you get accepted into the herd, you just kind of become a part of the herd forever. I say that the buffalo is like a cow with the brain of a horse. So when you create a bond and attachment with them, it's more, you know, more profound. It's not like a cow that just cares to be fed and that's about it. So the relationship they care to have with you, where the buffaloes are truly interested in hanging out with you.
Following you around.
Yeah. And it's all about the way that you train them, right? It's all about the handling of the animal, because you could have the opposite too. You know, so you stop handling these animals and just let them be kind of wild. You know, that's how they're going to be. So they will take, they're really easy to train, let's put it that way. And that's why they get used for work in a lot of these countries.
So what's your dream for your herd?
Well, the herd that I'm building is for dairy purposes. So What I'm doing with my herd is also a different kind of training. So very gentle handling where they want to be with you. They want to hang out. They come when you call them. So I use the power of attraction instead of the power of pushing an animal. I'd rather them come to me instead of pushing them to where I want to go. I'd rather them follow me to where we will go. The challenges here is access to land. You know, land is very expensive. So I lease land and I have a mobile dairy, which is a trailer that I pull behind the truck and I leave in the pasture where the cows are. I do rotational grazing, so I go from pasture to pasture. And this trailer has solar panels, so I can have my milk machine in there and I'll milk the animals. And it's enclosed, so when the weather is bad, I have a place that is a little protector from the elements to the milking. And it's a way to avoid the high expenses of land ownership, the expenses of building a barn. And then along the way, I have found out that it has great benefits for the land. So you avoid erosion around the traditional milking barn, reduce the amount of manure that gets built up. So that way you reduce the parasite load on the animals. So you have healthier animals, you have healthier soil, you have healthier milk. Rotational grazing with rotational milking part or following.
Where did the idea for the mobile
dairy? It came out of the need. You know, I had before the buffaloes were kind of legalized for commercial purposes in Colorado, I had was just a dairy cow. And I had that cow just out in the field with the rest of the herd where I worked at. And I had to milk that cow year-round. And yeah, in the middle of the winter when the weather is nasty, all I could think about is I just want just a little trailer to, you know, pull with me out in the field, milk her before work, and off we go. And then thinking about that, just slowly developed the idea of doing it with solar panels and putting the machine in there. And it just came, you know, was developed out of the need for something better to get the work done.
So are you producing cheese yet?
Just at home, not for commercial yet. I need to have more animals for that. Right now, all the work that I've done with the herd, I started with really young animals so I could really train them for the kind of handling that I want to have. So most of those animals I actually got them were bottle fed because they come from herds that they're not used to that kind of handling. So got animals that were early weaned and I finished bottle feeding them so I can create that bond with those animals. And as I started to build up the herd that I have more of them already trained the way that I wanted, I added a few adult that were the ones that I had two calves of last year. This year I'm going to have 5. Next year will be 9. And probably in the year 2022, I'll have maybe 20 cows. And by then I'll have enough volume that I can have a cheese brand. It's just a very slow going process. Yeah, 4 stages. You know, first it's just building up just a herd that has the right demeanor, you know, that can be handled easy. And I'm also working on the genetic components. So I have animals that I have bought from different herds in the US so I can have enough genetic diversity. And I have more bulls that I need for the 15 cows that I have. I have 3 bulls. And that's also to have more genetic diversity since the beginning. And the bulls that I have came from artificial insemination, from semen from Italy, 2 of them, and 1 from a bull from Brazil. So that's the foundation of something that is just going to take several years to build. But I know these animals, what they can do, and the quality of the milk and the cheese. And I already have a lot of interest from local restaurants that want to have the product. I'm just a few years away from being able to deliver. But it's a matter that it has to grow at the proper scale, slow. Otherwise, it's just really hard to get those animals trained for this method of production.
It's not easy to move you off your dream.
No, and the obstacles are big. You've got to stay true.
You've been moved a few times.
Yeah, I have failed a few times. And every time I fail, I guess I learn something new. Yeah. I guess this is actually my third water buffalo ranch, you could say.
Yeah, but it sounds like it's
maybe the fourth. Yeah, the third.
It's a passion, and your persistence.
Yes, it's just I cannot let it go. You know, the need to be with these animals and the attachment with these animals is something I just enjoy greatly.
That's been part of you since you were just a boy.
No, and I've been forced to something I also like to share with my kids. You know, like this is a really healthy milk. You know, and having kids, my boy that is 16 years old now, he grew up on the milk of the Buffalo Ranch that my dad sold back then. Then my daughter grew up on the milk of this Buffalo Ranch that we started when we last interviewed, I started down there. And now I got a third kid on the way who's going to grow up on the milk of these buffaloes in Colorado. All right. So, yes, they also are part of the inspiration too.
Yeah, well, buena suerte.
Gracias.
That was Jose Miranda. For more on immigrant stories, please go to our website, immigrantstories.net. And thanks for listening.